We're resuming the interview, and Gianni, I was going to ask you, why did your parents decide to buy that house at Flinders Park?
I think they decided to buy the house simply because they wanted to live in a house that was more solid, a bigger house, because the place we were living in Adria Avenue at Glen Eagles was, I call it a shed, okay, even though it was nice, okay, it was a nice house, it had all the comforts, but it wasn't a house, as it would have been something like a beach house or summer shed, okay, something like that. So they bought it simply because they wanted to live in a normal house like everyone else. That's why they bought it in Flinders Park. And they found evidently a good deal because, and it would have been a good deal because it was a shambles. The house was, even I as a kid, when I saw it, I was shocked. Because there were weeds, there were mounds of dirt, there was no lawn, there were mounds of dirt and grass everywhere. It was shocking.
And the bath, black.
And the bath, it was black. And the dogs had scratched the doors. There was a stable at the back with two or three horses in the stable. And there was one gigantic pine tree at the back. Very, very high pine tree. I think it would have been, I'm not exaggerating, maybe 10, 15 meters, 12 meters high at least.
And what did your parents plan for that place?
Well, when they bought it, they were happy because they made a good deal. Coming from this area, the vanity of people who only know one thing, work, physical labor. So Dad used to work at Holden's, did his overtime, Saturdays and so on, whatever. And when he came home from work, he'd start working on the house. Working on the house meant cleaning it, right? Dumping the rubbish in the house, having the awnings changed, having whatever needed changed. Painting it. It was all work that they did themselves. Painting it inside, cleaning, painting, awnings changed, putting the linoleum down, new linoleum down, redoing the wood, reconstructing the inside window doors. I remember they put in a veranda also. They extended the house. They put in a veranda, a closed veranda. They cleaned out the stable. And they made it into a workshop, okay, and with a little cellar for the grappa, for the wine that Dad used to produce.
Did they build the cellar?
Yeah, well, it was a hole in the ground, okay. It wasn't a real cellar. It was about, say, 2 meters high. It was pretty, you know, you go down on a ladder, but it would be, 2 meters long, 1 meter wide, you know, not very big.
And a roof?
It had wooden slabbing on it. It was inside the tool shed. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
So when they put cement on the floor, there was no cement on the floor. So before cementing the floor, they dug a hole, put in the cellar, and then put the slabbing in, wooden slabbing. So when you had to go down, you just take the slabs off. Make sense? Yes. That's why they bought the house. So they redid the garden too. They put in a lawn. They put in cement footpaths. My father and Enriqueta made the cement footpaths themselves. They put in new fencing outside. Everything, the house was new. I think it took them about a year to do it because it was spare time. Work when, you know, when Dad wasn't working at Holden's or doing whatever. A lot of work.
And
it was all manual labour. No tractors came in to dig or to.
Did you do any of the work?
I was lucky. I was a kid. I think that my generation has been the luckiest that anyone can ever remember. Our generation. I'll include you. Because we saw no wars. We were born after the wars. We were born and we were too little to work, to participate. So Mum and Dad looked after us. And they did all the working. So they did the wars, they suffered the wars, they suffered the famine, they suffered And we came afterwards and we just lived the best of life. Actually, we got our first TV set in 1960 at Flinders Park. So I consider myself to be extremely lucky. I grew up in hard times, okay. I wasn't a spoiled child. I never have been a spoiled child. Our parents they led the real life. Getting back to what I said before about the war. People don't talk about war. They don't take sides in general. This is from my side of the family. Because they've lived it. People who've lived it, who've lived suffering on their own skin, will keep it to themselves.
When you were at Flinders Park, there was also a vegetable garden?
In our place?
Yeah.
For heaven's sake, of course. I mean, we had a big vegetable garden with everything in it. Mum and Dad were quite good at, you know, gardening, you know, planting things. We had fruit trees, vegetable garden, chicken shed. I think we had 15 chooks and roosters. Dad used to make his own wine with a riquetto. They used to have it. He used to make some grappa too. You weren't allowed to. But the thing is, they'd make the grappa, they'd be petrified that the cops would find the grappa. But the grappa, they would never drink the damn thing anyway. They just make it because it was tradition in Italy to make the grappa. So they'd make the grappa. They'd dig holes everywhere in the backyard to hide it. Then they forget it was there. This is just to give you an idea of the mentality. It was very, very funny.
And if they didn't drink it, who did?
Oh, probably they forgot it was there. I remember, Watson, when Dad sold his land and the block and the house and the shed to... he sold the land to Tranquillo, Roma, Milva's sister, Roma, the younger
Bordignon.
Sister. Bordignon. Tranquillo Bordignon. He sold the land and the shed to Bordignon, and Bordignon built his new house up front, okay? So things had changed then. The saying goes that, you know, when he was digging, or when they tore down the shed, right, and they were digging the garden and putting, he found bottles of Raspa. That's what happened to the Raspa. Because they wouldn't drink. They would drink a little of Raspa occasionally. That's all there was to it.
And when Riquetto came to help you, mm-hmm. where was Riquetto and Etty and the family living?
They were living on Aruna Road in Kilkenny.
Oh, all that time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not having shifted to Donegal's, they'd gone straight from Mr. Cook's house to Aruna Road. And the house was pretty well off, okay? It didn't have a big garden. The front garden didn't exist. It had a patch of lawn which was about a metre wide, okay? And the backyard wasn't very big. It was about 400 square metres, I think, not more than that. The land, the block itself.
And at your house in Frobisher Road... Frobisher Avenue. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Who would come to your house?
In what way?
Visits.
We didn't have very much social life, okay? We didn't social... It was mainly, Riquetto, Etty, the kids. Zia Zinevra, Dad's sister. She married a man from... who'd gone to Australia in the 30s, I think. Angelo Kaong, and I think you're familiar with the Kaong surname. There are quite a few. Quite a few brothers left Ramon di Loria, that's where they're originally from, which is near Riese. And they immigrated in the 30s, I think. One was a butcher, another was a bricklayer, whatever. So she married Angelo, who was a great guy, fantastic guy. They had three kids, and so we would associate with them more often, okay? Not many people came to our, you know, visit because everyone was working that I know of, okay? Not having your own business, not having a business and working as an employee in a factory. So we didn't have many, friends that would come to see us. Mum had friends from on Grange Road. Her best friend was Elda Battaglia. Quite a few friends, they would come, but it was occasional sort of thing. We would go out on picnics as a kid, I remember, with, you know, all these groups of people, family, friends.
And where did you go?
A national park, we'd go crabbing. Two Worlds, I think you'd go crabbing. Often to national park. We'd go, you know, often on tours to the wineries, okay? That was it, basically.
The beach?
Oh, beach was a must.
And which
we'd
beach?
We'd go to Grange Beach. It was always Grange Beach. Semaphore was the beach for the elite. Henley Beach was so-and-so. Glenelg was too far away. So it was Grange. And it used to be very strange because I remember as a kid, the beach used to be very populated in the 50s and the 60s. A lot of people used to go to the beach. Go to the beach now, when I go down to Adelaide, there are very, very few people on the beach. Not many. There used to be many more when I was a kid. Many, many more.
That's interesting to know the difference.
Yeah.
And what about the events in the Venator community, like weddings and things like that? Did your parents get invited to weddings?
Yes, definitely. Well, you know, everyone knew everyone, okay? Basically, there was always a good relationship with everyone, always. So you're always invited to the wedding. Weddings used to be held in the, I think, what you'd call a warehouse, some sort of warehouse in the middle of, I can't remember where. And they were great times for kids.
Do you mean a warehouse like at a market garden or
a shed? A big shed.
Yeah.
Big shed.
Yeah.
Big shed. And where they used to stock up whatever. Perhaps there were fruit, vegetables, whatever. So we'd have weddings there. It would have been a buffet wedding, where every lady that was invited would bring. Some sort of one quality of meal or vegetables or bread or whatever. So everyone bought something that would be eaten at the wedding. There would be an orchestra, a band playing. You could dance. And they were the best weddings I'd ever attended, I think. Lovely weddings. Weddings that, you know, that normal people have in normal surroundings where people unite to have a great time and not sit down in a restaurant like sitting in a Cardine tin and, you know, waiting to be served at a table, which I think is horrible.
And did your family go to church?
Yes, they did. My family was not a religious family. I'm not a religious person, even though I did grow up a Catholic and I had a Catholic upbringing, having gone to a Catholic college, unfortunately. But, you know, mine brought me up as a kid by the rules. I went to Gleneagles Primary School or Kindergarten for a year. Then I did 1 year at Woodville Primary. Don't ask me what age. Then I did a couple of years at St. Joseph's Primary School, which was connected to St. Joseph's church.
Was that at Captain Cook Avenue?
That's it there, yeah.
And
we all went there.
Were there other kids from Italian families there?
I remember as names, Bernos, Tonolatos, Raymond, Adrian Tonolato, Santin, Torism. These are the names that I remember.
And then after...
Then Pagaliti and, you know... Not Venator, Italians.
Adami?
No, can't remember that name.
So you did your primary school there?
I did, yeah, a couple of years there.
And did you make your first communion from there?
St. Joseph's, yes.
And was that a special occasion in your family?
Very special, well, as it is, as always, in Italian families. The Holy Communion, Communion Day, is a special event. And we had dinner afterwards at home with, you know, friends and relatives. The closest friends and relatives, right? It'd be a special day.
And was the do you remember if the priest at that place was Italian or...
I can't remember.
Okay.
Can't remember. I think he was. I think he was Italian.
And what about confirmation?
I was confirmed.
And who was your Santolo?
My Santolo is a man from Bigolino who I think he was the same age as my father, or perhaps a year younger. His name is Giovanni De Poi. Surname is Nani Curi, Nani Giovanni, Nani Curi. He went with Dad to Australia, I don't know in what year. And I know that he suffered, his body was burnt working in some mines in the desert. My father was there too, I think. I can't remember. Very, very vague memories when they got there initially. He had a brother there too who died very, very young. And I remember my father telling me that his burns were so bad that they had to tie him outside of the aircraft. It was a small aircraft to take him to hospital. Anyway, he survived, okay. Nothing, there was no signs of the burning or whatever. I don't know how he was burnt. He eventually became, he was working in the Market Gardeners on East Terrace, correct? That's where the gardens were. Not the garden, sorry, the marketplace was on East Terrace. And at the end, I don't know after how many years because, you know, I didn't follow it. He was my godfather and he was one of the big players in the marketplace, especially at that time with onions and in particular with onions with other foodstuffs, with other vegetables. He grew to become what he was known as the Onion King of Australia.
And when you said Nani Curi, was that his nickname? Right. And I wanted to just ask you one other question about your family. Where did your mother shop for, say, food and clothes, that kind of thing?
Well, there weren't that many supermarkets at the beginning. So, you know, you'd have your delicatessen or your grocer shop or the butcher shop. There'd be some around. There would be some in the area. Flinders Park and Glen Eagles then. Eventually, where did we go shopping? You know, the first supermarket. I can't remember. I know she used to catch the bus every Saturday to go to the city. Because the bus stop was, you know, a few steps down the road.
And why did she go every Saturday?
She loved looking at shop windows.
By herself?
Oh, yeah, she'd go by herself. Or she'd meet up with her friend Elda or with Bruno or with my auntie. My auntie would train in from West Croydon. They'd meet in the city and they'd be there all morning because shops closed at 11:30, 12 o'clock. And she'd have a great time. Mum used to love, she did the same when she came back here. We're far from Treviso, so she'd have to catch a bus. From Bigolino to Treviso, she'd go to Treviso. She'd buy a kilo of salt and she'd be happy. I'm not kidding you. Even in Australia. She'd buy a peg, come home. She just enjoyed walking around, enjoying gazing through the shop windows.
Where would she buy her clothes?
She'd go to Myers, John Martin's, David Jones. Yeah.
And when you said that your parents worked really hard, that sense of not having a lot of social life was...
That's it.
And was that common for you, noticing other people's families?
Well, you know, the people we associated with evidently led the same life. That was it.
Didn't know anything else?
No, didn't know anything else. Just, you know, work... Work and work. Then, you know, at home it was normal, you know, normal people. There was never any harshness at home, never. Even with Riquetto's place or Zirzinera or our other friends, okay? You know, very normal people. But it was always work.
And you told me that your dad used to read a lot.
Big reader.
What sort of things did he
read?
He
used to buy the Advertiser in the morning and the newspaper at night, the news at night then. And he'd buy an Italian newspaper called the La Fiamma or Il Globo. And he'd listen to the radio. And he'd always be, he was a thinker, my father. He was a thinker, a big thinker. My grandfather used to be a great... My grandfather, dad's dad, used to pick up a piece of paper on the ground, and if there was something, if it was printed on it, he'd sit down and read it. I'm not kidding.
What language did you speak at home?
Dialect. Italian dialect. Sorry, Veneto dialect.
And you said that your father bought the advertiser in the news,
yes.
So his knowledge
My English
of English?
Was very good.
And how would he have learned English?
Speaking it and reading.
Teaching himself?
Teaching himself. My father went to Germany at the age of 16, and he was fluent in German when he came back. He was, I know this as a fact because I know that he used to teach me German when I was a kid. Eins, zwei, drei, vier, fünf. He knew, you know, and I learned numbers in German from my dad, who'd never, he'd done his fourth grade of primary school. But he had a good, you know, good memory, good brain.
And your mother, did she learn
Mum
English?
Mum was the opposite. No, Mum would speak English, but she was, you know, she was just a happy person, Mum. Mum enjoyed doing her job, cleaning the house. Not wanting problems. If there was a problem, don't overstress it, okay? There's always a solution, okay? Be happy sort of a thing. And live your life, okay, as best as you can, right, and enjoy yourself. Don't go over the hill. Don't exaggerate. You don't need to. She was a very happy person, Mum. She would sit underneath a peach tree, and she loved lamb. And she'd be chewing on a piece of lamb. She would say, this is life.
The peach tree, the lamb. Sounds delightful. So I guess what you learned from your parents were some pretty interesting values then.
Yes. Yeah.
So from your father?
Oh, they were very similar. Mum was the... she held the rudder. Mum, because Dad was always asking her for advice. He was always, and my father, at the end of the day, then, you know, he ended up having, I won't say Alzheimer's, but dementia at a very, very, very young age when he returned to Italy. And thinking about it later, you know, it dawned on all of us that perhaps he was suffering from anguish, from anxiety. Late in Australia, you know, in his later years in Australia, you could tell that there was, you know, something wasn't there, okay? He was always a bit stressed out, a bit anxious, you know, worried. He's always worrying. He was a good man, kind man. But there was something wasn't working. So, she was the person who made decisions. He would make decisions too, but he'd always ask her for consent.
And do you think that was unusual?
No. I grew up in a family, contrary to what many people believe, where our family was very, very open, democratic. Ladies were ladies and commanded, like the men did. They had a role, they had their role to carry out, but, you know, if Mum didn't have time to wash the dishes, Dad would. If Mum didn't have time to clean the, to sweep the floor, Dad would. Can you follow me? It wasn't the woman had to do that. It's a woman's job.
So it's much more equal.
It was equal. Even the Ricchetto's family, it was equal. You know, all the people that I grew up with had this equality. The people I know, our family at least, had this culture. It was equal.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It is very, because the majority would not have accepted, men would not have accepted that.
No, they would have not seen themselves as separate.
Oh, superior.
Yeah.
Not separate, superior. But, you know, I grew up differently where, you know, men were men and women were women, as it is. That's all there is to it. I mean, there's no dominance of one over the other. So you help yourself out. That's all there is to it, I think. It's quite simple. When things that are simple become complicated, someone's doing you in.
And what do you know about other Veneti who might have arrived in Adelaide around the time or in the 50s?
Not very much. Not very much, because I was, when I went to Flinders Park, then I enrolled at school, St. Michael's College, Beverley, and, it was college time. For me, my childhood was dedicated to college, school. Mum and Dad used to go to work. I used to go to college, 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:30, whatever it was. Used to walk there, or used to ride my bike, okay? And it was, until 4, 4:30, whatever it was. It was all day at school, and that was for 8 years. So, college then meant rules that you had to go by. So Mum and Dad used to work at in the factory, at home, help my auntie out, right? Saturdays and Sundays were the days, if they weren't working, Dad wasn't working, we would, be together. It was, family time sort of a thing. So, I would either go to the Kittles' place, or he'd come to our place, or we'd go quite often to my auntie Ginevra's place up at Gillis Plains. I think it's on Main Northeast Road. With her husband, Angelo Cohn, they'd bought quite a bit of land up there. And an old house. And they had, I don't know what ideas they had, but eventually, back in the early 60s, I think it was, maybe perhaps the end of the 50s, they started building shops in the middle of nowhere, because there were no houses there, very few. And I remember Dad and Riquito going up on Sundays, helping them with the cement. See, that was life. That's how, that's how I grew up anyway. They eventually built 14 shops or 16 shops on the main road. And there was no one around, no houses. And, evidently they had this foresight. This zone will be developed one day. So they programmed things, hoping that, the development would occur quickly. It didn't occur quickly, but it did occur while they were still in good health. And now there's a big shopping center there that's been on what was a bit of their land. So they were quite successful.
It's interesting.
We used to go there to play, so I'll just finish this. On Sundays, I remember that they were, Gillis Plains was a long way away. It was like going to Mildura, I think. So on Sundays, we'd go there, and my uncle, Angelo Kong, he'd built bowling lanes, Italian bowling lanes.
Like for bocce?
Bocce. He'd have four of those or six. And so he'd have all the Veneti, all the Italians, up there on a Sunday. It was full of people. It was a novelty, okay? It was a regular bocce place, and where he'd serve beer. But so he didn't serve it, get the bottles of beer out, and salami or whatever. So, you'd eat and you'd drink, and you'd play bocce. The kids would run around, right, break windows, as kids do, throw stones.
And were women there too?
Yes, they were. Not often, but because bocce is a man's game, but, women would sit down or whatever.
Yeah, I was thinking...
No, they were great times as a kid, right, growing up in the wilderness, because it was wild then, like it was wild back in the area of Glen Eagles. When I went there, I can remember the sand dune. There were sand dunes there. Sand dune, we're talking about 3 kilometres from the sea, roughly. And there were sand dunes, yellow, not white sand, yellowish sand dunes. I've got this image in my mind. And bamboos, plenty of bamboos.
Good for tomato steaks?
I've got no idea. It was good for making bows and arrows.
I was thinking Gillis Plains in those days. Uh-huh. Like, it's strange to think of Vanity being there.
There you go.
But, as you say, the foresight was pretty good.
Yep.
Why would your parents have sent you to the Catholic schools?
It was the closest one there. Why Catholic? Because we're Catholic. No other reason why.
But not every Italian family sent their children to Catholic schools.
No. Everyone has his own upbringing. Everyone has his own culture, okay? There wasn't schooling behind either of our two families, my mum's side or dad's side. Dad was a thinker. Dad was the one who, thought more, right, considered more, had more consideration, understood things better than, you know, quite a few people. And I think it was just a question of choosing, you know, culture that associated you with the homeland, with Italy, full stop.
And how important was it for your parents to give you an education?
Very important.
Because of
not
what they...
not exceedingly important. They didn't force me in any way to do anything. I didn't know if I was going to be Arthur or Martha or John or Billy, you know, but I just went through school. I got through school.
What did you like about school?
I didn't.
Nothing appealed?
No.
So when you say it was rule focused, like, did you accept those rules?
Yes, I had to accept them.
And what's your memory of the culture of St. Michael's?
There was no culture, as I see it. There was no... See, what... I think I mentioned this to you before. What I lacked in Australia, what I missed for some reason or other, was an identity. Growing up with an identity, growing up in an ambient that I could feel, you know, connected to, that I could identify myself with, and that wasn't, you know, I didn't find that anywhere. Not in college, for heaven's sake.
And we'll talk about that in more detail lately, the identity stuff. Mm. But I was wondering, like, was there...
College was fantastic because of the rules. I say it's fantastic now. Looking at the, you know, the way we were brought up with rules. And if you live in society, you need rules. So I appreciate the college system because of the rules, that's all. And I realise the importance of rules because, you know, when you live with people, I'll repeat that, you've got to go by the rules if you want to live comfortably. Otherwise, you're going to be squabbling, you're going to be, you know, stress.
So was there a focus in that school on really good academic education?
Not exceeding, you know, not really, not too much. You know, I would say... not academic education. Let's just call it education.
So they weren't like those brothers, the De La Salle brothers, weren't preparing people for university or professions or.
They weren't preparing them for professions. Put it that way.
They weren't.
I didn't see it. Perhaps they were, but I didn't realise it. So I don't want to criticise.
No.
Because I don't know if it was my lack of understanding then, or their lack of capacity to get the message through to me.
Were there other boys from Italian families?
Plenty. It was a mixed school. I'm glad because I grew up with kids, you know, that were, well, Veneti, Neapolitan, Sicilian, from Malta, from Austria, from Vietnam, from Germany, from Holland. It was a mixture.
And you told me you like sport.
I love sport. So certain things about sport, I do.
Were boys encouraged?
They were. St. Michael's encouraged sports. You had to play. You had to participate in sports.
Like was compulsory.
It was compulsory. Yes.
Could you have a choice?
Yes, definitely.
So, what was the choice?
I chose everything. I was a bit nuts.
Australian rules football.
Well, I did swimming. As you know, as a kid, you had to learn how to swim. You had to. It was a must. So it was swimming. Then I used to love gymnastics. I used to like gymnastics.
Was that taught at school or was that somewhere?
It was taught at school, but not many people enrolled in gymnastics classes. And I did. I was one of the few who did because I liked it. Then it was gymnastics. Swimming was, you're in Australia, you have to learn how to swim. They take us to the swimming pool to learn swimming and to have competitions during the summer period, which is excellent.
Where did you go? Was it to the city baths?
We went to the city baths also, yes. Yeah. And somewhere else, I can't remember. We used to go to the beach at times too.
And there was a swimming pool at Henley Beach.
I can't remember. We used to go to Henley Beach, some place on the beach, but I can't remember.
So gymnastics, swimming?
Swimming, football, definitely football. Now we got the preliminary finals at midday. They're playing now.
Are they?
Yes, they are. And I have direct streaming on the internet
for Australian rules?
I pay $120 a year for this.
Who do you pay?
Well, the people who do the broadcasting.
Like the Australian...
AFL Football League.
Oh, really?
Or
yeah. Oh, my goodness.
I see all the football matches.
Oh, okay. And did you play with a school team?
I played with the school teams. And I played tennis as well. Yeah.
And your parents...
Oh, no. And, you know, I was what I was good at, pretty good at, was athletics, gymnastics for sure, but that was limited when I was young. Athletics, I was quite good at running. What else? I wasn't too bad at football. A bit too light, a bit too small.
And did your parents support you taking you? And
no, well, they didn't take me. I went. No one ever took me.
So you had a bike?
I had a bike or I had a bus. I mean, to the kids I knew, even Tony Bryce. Tony Bryce was one of my best friends who lived on Montreal Avenue. No, not Montreal Avenue. It was Greville Avenue in Flinders Park. He was my best friend. He's died now. He died a couple of years, 3 or 4 years ago. And I was with, you know, we were together quite always. He used to muck around quite a lot.
Playing sport,
playing football, doing chemistry, making bombs at home.
And you'd go to each other's places?
Yes, often.
And what would you notice about his family that was different from yours?
His family, and I discovered this unfortunately last year because I met his daughter who was living at his old place. And what was her name? Kelly. Her name's Kelly. One of his two daughters. Lovely lad, Tony. I remember he left Adelaide with a couple of friends of his to go to England. He was my age. Back in 66... or early 67, before I went to Italy. He left school before I did. He left school in the year before leaving honours. Went to work as a clerk at General Motors Holdens. And then he left for the UK, stayed in England, I think, for 3 years. We were supposed to meet up in Venice when I arrived in Italy, but we never did. I remember going to his place. It was always, he was an only child like me, Tony. Had a lovely mum. His dad, you really spoke his dad. You really saw his father. Really saw his father. It was always very, very quiet there. There was no happiness. There was no, you know, it was grey. Nice, but grey. It was always, you know, us two kids. Reminds me of Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn sort of a thing. But we never got into that mischief because being college boys, we always had our suits on even when we went to bed. Mentally speaking, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, the rules.
The rules, that was it. Mm. So, you know, he used to come to my place and, you know, I used to offer him espresso coffee. You know, coffee in the mocha machines, and he used to love it. So that was the exchange that, you know, we were having as kids.
And did you ever eat at his place?
No. Oh, perhaps I did, but it wasn't something, you know, common, no. Mm. I had quite a few Australian friends. My friends were more Australian than Italian because I live on a street that was Australian, for Australian people, mainly. The Italians, the market gardeners were further away, okay, and they were all together, and I was on the outskirts. So I grew up, mixing with the Trevor Moody, Gary Wilson, the Munns boys. They were the sons of the cop who run the police station. Yeah, that's why I speak English so well.
Yeah, I think your English is exceptional. You have dual Australian citizenship,
yes.
And that's. I was going to ask you about your parents. Did they become naturalised?
My dad did. Mum didn't.
And was there a reason that your mum didn't?
She didn't bother. There's no reason. Simply no. She was, you know, she was just happy-go-lucky, mum.
But often wives become naturalised.
My mum, I know,
time.
But you know, mum didn't even think about it. Can you follow me? There wasn't a reason. If dad insisted, she would have become naturalised.
So how important would it have been for your dad to become naturalised?
Very important.
Why?
It would have made it easier for him in associating with Australia. with Australian administration. Can you follow me? Because certainly there would have been some, barriers, some, rules to go by. And if you're Australian, you're Australian.
And it's interesting that he didn't think that your mother should definitely become an
Australian
citizen. Well,
it wasn't necessary,
citizen.
You know. Australia was very easy. You know how, when I got my first passport in Australia, you know what my name was in Australia? I was born and baptised, and in a town hall, my name is written as Giovanni Reboli. My name is Giovanni Reboli. When I went to school, I was Johnny Reboli. When they gave me my passport, what's your name, sir, son? Johnny Reboli. So, Johnny Reboli on the passport.
Has it been changed?
That was Australia years ago. From a formal point of view, from an administration point of view, very, very easy-go-lucky. Very, as it should be. Why complicate? Life is complicated because of illness. But, now it's changed because they had to change. My Australian passport says Giovanni Reboli because that is my name.
Yeah, and that's the name on your birth certificate.
That's it.
Yeah.
So Australia then was very easy-go-lucky, very, very easy. If someone wanted to create havoc and become, do evil, as I say, or he could quite well.
Did you choose to become naturalised then?
I was 2 years old. I was three. My father became naturalised in 1954. So automatically when he became Australian citizen, his children became Australian citizens.
And you know how you've just said that for your father it was really important to associate himself with Australia. Do you think his intention was that he would be there permanently?
No. I don't think any Italian who went to Australia intended to go there permanently. That's very broad, okay? But I think the majority of the Italians would have said, I'll go there, make money, and, eventually one day come back. This is what they all think. But, after living in a place and becoming accustomed to it, and perhaps returning, as many do, with the idea of returning definitely, or they return to see what it's like, and they find that it's not like what they imagined. Because when you leave a place, and you leave traditions, and you leave ways of thinking, of doing, of eating, and you transfer yourself into another culture, you become acclimatized to the new culture whilst clinging to the old culture. But in the meantime, the old culture changes while you're away. Even the language changes. So coming back, you don't find what you idolized as a kid, as when you were young. That makes sense. So many would have come back, okay, and returned back to Australia or wherever they were living. Some would have come back and attempted to live here and then gone back to Australia after a few years, and some just remained.
So for your parents, it was like provisional?
Don't call it provisional. You're right. Call it provisional because I remember Dad always speaking about Italy and speaking about Germany. He went there as a kid. So you can imagine as a young person, if things work, if you get a good salary, if you're respected, if you associate well with the people, the locals, you like it. So Dad always had a great feeling for Germany, for the way they were organized.
Even after the war, after the experience of the war.
Yeah. But, the war is what? War is war. And it was carried out by someone who wanted to go to war. It doesn't mean that all the Germans wanted to go to war. Can you follow me? If you've got a madman running loose, either you stop him or the infection, it becomes bigger. Then the people are forced to go by what he says. This is what happened in Germany. Germans are fantastic people.
And I think that we'll bring the interview to this part of the interview to a close now. But I just wanted to check with you about your parents. They didn't return to Italy for a visit.
They never returned for a visit, no.
And was there a reason that they didn't? Because quite a few other people...
There was nearly everyone. Many people did return. I don't know. I think that, you know, what my belief is now, you know, after having gone through my father's illness in particular, is that, you know, he was slowly losing the strength. His mind was no longer strong. He didn't have any more ambition. He was losing his ambition. Okay.
At that point, was he working?
He always worked, my father, even when he came back. But, you know, there was no longer that striving to develop yourself, to affirm yourself. Something is, you know, something had just blocked. I think it has to do with you know, his well-being. I mean, there was nothing you could say up front, you know, that indicated that there was something wrong with him, but deep down under there was something wrong with him, because that urge, the bombshell you have inside you that stimulates you to go ahead, to do things, to dream, right? That had gone. And when that gone, that means, you know, something's not working.
Would your mother have picked that up?
Yes. Well, women do pick these things up.
And
she would have picked it up. I'll continue what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because I think you'd like me to add something onto that. I think she would have picked it up, not knowing what it was. You'd think it could have been anxiety, stress, tired, but never, you know, what it turned out to become. So she'd keep it to him. She'd always follow him. They'd never have, normal arguments, okay, discussions, but they always got on extremely well. So she'd, you know, just follow him. If he decided to do something, what do you say? Let's go. I don't think Mum wanted to come back to Italy. She lived a nice life there.
And her
sister was there. So when Dad decided to come back, she said, okay.
And to sum up this part of the interview about your family, your parents, you, what would your parents have wanted for you as they saw you grow up?
No, well, to be successful in whatever I did. Full stop. There was no ambition. My mum wanted me to be a physiotherapist.
Why?
Because she thought that it was a good job. She saw it as a good job, helping people, curing people, okay? And you'd never be out of a job, okay? And it's what you're doing, good. You're assisting people in improving their lifestyle.
Had you done science subjects at school?
The usual subjects that were taught at schools. Then we used to do what? Maths, mathematics, from intermediate on. Maths, physics, chemistry, that was it. Before, and it was arithmetic, geometry, and algebra, but that was before. Then it became maths, and maths one, maths two, physics, chemistry. Then I did Latin, French, English, history.
So you had quite geography. A wide education.
Yes, quite then. A wide education. But I wasn't into science. I was very bad at maths. The only year that I got good results in maths was the second year, when I had a teacher that I could understand. And his name was Brother George. And I did excellent. I got excellent results in all my subjects with Brother George, full stop. When he was gone, you know, I didn't actually bother about it. The important thing for me was to get through.
Yeah, but you did your full secondary education, leaving honours, because you could have left.
I did
after
university.
Leaving.
I did university too.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that.
I dropped out afterward, but you know.
Yeah. What, was it an easy transition to go from school
to
university?
No, very difficult. No. Living in, going to school at St. Michael's and living the way that I lived, my lifestyle or the ambient I was surrounded by, when I went to university, I was lost. It was a different world, it was a new world. It was like having gone to the moon.
And challenging.
Very challenging. Very challenging. As I said before, I had never socialized. I had never, clung to anything. Not because I didn't want to, because the ambient that surrounded me didn't give me that possibility.
It didn't give
you
the possibility?
No, not at all.
What about your job at the Findon Hotel? How old were you when you were...
66. I started working at the Findon. 66, 18 years old. 18.
And how did you get that job?
I can't remember.
And did your parents think that was okay?
Fantastic. I used to love that job. I was doing university okay. Then I dropped down after 1 year. Then I re-enrolled, doing only one subject, French. I did French. And I started working at the Finland Hotel part-time. Part-time meant doing a few hours, and then they found out I was pretty good, with customers. I used to do between 35 to 40 hours a week. I used to do quite a few hours. I wasn't too bad, I enjoyed it, and I was pretty reliable.
And not far to go?
And not far to go. And bought myself a Beetle, a car. No one knew about it. I bought it. Dad said, whose car is that? It's mine.
Why did you
Dad would always say, I'll buy you a car if you get through schools, okay? If you're promoted, I'll buy you a car. Okay, get through school, he doesn't buy me a car, so I'll buy myself a car.
Did you have a scholarship to go to university?
No, I wasn't that bright.
So
I used to get kicked up the ass.
Who from?
No, well, that's just an expression that I use.
Oh, okay. So
I got through pretty well. Last year, my results weren't too bad, but pretty good.
So who was paying your fees? Or was it already...
No, it wasn't free.
No.
I can't remember.
I was just wondering if you had to work to support yourself.
No, not to that stage. I was earning good money at the Findon. But it wasn't a need for money. I wasn't in need of money, put it that way. Mum and Dad always looked after me, okay? I wasn't a big spender. I wasn't the type of person who would, bludge his way along. I never have been. But Mum and Dad will always... I wasn't a spoiled kid, but I was looked after, put it that way.
And were you mixing with other kids when you were in that first year at uni?
Yes.
Yeah. And doing what sort of things?
Studying.
Not going out?
No, studying.
So you were a dedicated student?
Yeah, I was dedicated. Definitely.
And what difference...
Too dedicated.
Too?
Yeah.
Why?
Because to be dedicated, to the extent that I was, I had to know what I was doing.
And it wasn't clear?
No.
And that's why you dropped out?
Yes,
and then...
that's why.
And what difference did it make having your VW?
Being independent. Going where I wanted, when I wanted. And not having to ask my father to lend me his car that he wouldn't do, or he'd do it, but he was so jealous of his car. Can you follow me? So if I had my own car, I'd have no problems.
And what kind of car did you have?
I bought your he had a whole nice
by
car.
That white time.
Oh, yeah.
And a new one?
Yeah, he had a new one. He changed cars two or three times. He kept to change the car every second year. Two different personalities as a kid, my zero kid. But Dad was, don't need to change the car as often as that, throwing your money away. But, he had a nice car.
And would you...
We were pretty well off,
Well, I guess with two parents working and working hard.
Yeah, working hard. They worked very hard because I remember when we shifted to Flinders Park, our house, the garden that my mum and dad created in the house itself was beautiful, by looking at it from a landscape point of view.
I won't say it was the best house on the road, but, you know, we're nearly there.
And all the attention that yeah. they were giving to
it. Oh, enormous, yes. There wasn't, you know, a weed anywhere. Flowers and grass and mowed every week. Yeah. Very conscientious people. Abiding. Went by the rules.
And in that year that you took off, were you working entirely at the Findon Hotel?
I did. I had worked in a supermarket before for about a month or 2 months, I can't remember. And then I found this job at the Findon in the bottle department to begin with, because I was underage. I was not, didn't have the age to work in the front bar. So you had to be 21, I think it was then. And or 18. No, you had to be 21. I can't remember. Anyway, I was underage, so I could work in the bottle department. And so I worked there for a while, and then they said, oh, would you like to work in the bottle department, in the front bar? That's where all the drunkies came in. That's fantastic. So because we had, closing at 6 p.m. closing. Hotels used to close at 6 o'clock. No alcohol served after 6 p.m. And Sunday was closed. And I used to have a great time because they used to finish work at 5 o'clock. The bulls used to come in, used to fill the front bar up. And that was the Findon Hotel, which was the hotel in Adelaide. I used to have a great time.
And you worked on the Sunday shifts?
When they had the first Sunday opening, they opened on a Sunday. I was the one who ran the hotel that Sunday with a waitress. I was in the kitchen. We didn't serve anything. No one came in. But we had steaks to prepare, lobsters that I remember, and behind the bar as well. It was interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like you wouldn't have had much of a social life if you were working so hard.
I didn't have a social life. I remember working at the Findon. They introduced a couple of nights a week dancing until, 10:30, 11 o'clock. So I used to work behind the bar. And then we'd clean up. I'd get home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Before going home, we'd go to the city and have maybe gnocchi.
Where at?
I can't remember.
Marcellina's.
Perhaps, yeah, Marcellina's, yeah, that's it.
And you must have been earning quite good money.
I was. Because you were working part-time, you were paid quite well.
And doing Sundays and things like that, more pay.
Yep.
Yeah. So that would have been an insight into a whole different world.
That's it. You got it there. You hit the nail on the head. That's when I started, broadening my horizons.
Because it would have been a very different culture to observe.
To observe and, to intermingle with people. I have a knack for mixing with people.
And not many Italians would have gone there?
Yes, many.
Did they?
Yep. Yes.
Because it was like the local?
But the Findon was the inn hotel in Adelaide. When I was there, it was the newest hotel they'd built in Adelaide.
Ah. Oh. But there weren't many hotels.
There were hotels on, there was the Theberton Hotel. There was the Hotel Highmast on the Port Road. There were hotels.
But everywhere. Not that many in that area.
No. You'd have to go to Grange, to Henley, Lockleys, that I can remember.
So the Market Gardeners...
Everyone was there. That was the hotel. That was the hotel. The Italian hotel.
And did people know who you were?
I don't really know. No, I don't think so.
They wouldn't
have known. My friends would have, but, that was it.
But not that older generation?
No, not at all. No. I made quite a few friends there. Actually, I sold my Volkswagen to one of the customers.
Oh, you did well then. Johnny, I think that we have done very well with this part of the interview, and I'd like to say thank you very much. There's quite a lot more that we will explore in yet another interview. So thank you for your time today.